who was in a wheelchair but had shown up as he had promised. "I can't believe it," said Marcus. "I've read all of his books 3 times. He's my favourite writer ever." "I'll introduce you to him," said George proudly. "Enoch and I are big pals." I smiled. It was nice to hear. "Right," I said, opening the door. "Let's do this." "Wait," cried George. "Does anyone have a mirror?" "You're only gorgeous," said Marcus. "Stop looking at yourself. Shut up. You shut up."
"Both of you shut up," said Liam. We got out of the car into the sunlight, and I felt a slight pain in my head and remembered that I'd forgotten to take my morning pill. It didn't matter too much. We'd be passing by the house later on the way to the reception, and I could stop in for a moment and take it then. The doctors had told me that I had 6 months, but if Julian was to be believed, it was more likely to be just over 2. 3 days after Halloween. "Just like me," said Charles, waving goodbye to me as I stepped out onto the street. "A brain tumour.
Turns out, you're a real Avery after all."
I laughed, then turned to look at the registry office before me. Death was coming for me. I knew that, but I didn't want to think about it today.
The New Ireland.
As I entered the registry office, I saw Tom hovering near the front, looking handsome in his wedding suit, his daughter, son-in-law, and grandchildren standing next to him with wide smiles on all their faces. When he saw me, he raised a hand in the air, and I walked over, my arms open wide to embrace him. "Didn't we get great weather for it all the same?" said Jane, leaning over and giving me a kiss on the cheek.
"We did," I said. "Somebody up there is in our corner."
"And why wouldn't they be?"
said Tom, smiling.
"When you look back, Cyril, did you ever think a day like this would happen?"
"Honestly," I said, shaking my head, "no."
"Do you have your speech ready?"
"Everyone is very concerned about this speech," I said. "It's written. It's the right length. There's a few jokes in it, and I think we'll all be happy."
"Good man."
"We weren't sure we were even going to make it," said Jane.
"Why?"
I asked, frowning.
"Don't,"
said Tom. "His arthritis," she said, lowering her voice a little. "He's been having a terrible time of it."
"But it's fine today," said Tom. "There's not a bother on me."
"Sure none of us are as we were," I said. "We'll all get through the day anyway."
"It'd be very strange to have a son who's only a few years younger than me," he said.
"I won't be calling you Dad, if that's what you're expecting," I said, smiling. "He was a nice man, Tom. I didn't know him very well, but from what I'd seen, I liked him. An architect by career, he'd been retired for 13 years and had a nice bungalow in Howth with a great view over Ireland's Eye. I'd been out there a couple of times already, and he'd always made me feel very welcome. My mother and he had met on Tinder." A hand touched my arm, and I turned around to see Iñak standing behind me.
"They're here," he said.
"They're here," I repeated, turning back to Tom, my voice rising like an excited child. And we took our leave of each other, he going to the front of the registry office, me going to the back, while everyone else took their seats. As the guests sat down, I said a quick hello to Jack Smoot, who shook my hand and told me that there was nothing that would ever have brought him back to Ireland except for this.
"And I'm getting the fuck out of the place first thing tomorrow morning," he added.
The doors opened, and that's when I saw her, standing at the end of the aisle, 86 years old, without a care in the world, and looking as happy as any bride on our wedding day. Next to her, my ex-wife Alice and Cyril too. She'd stayed with them the night before, who surrendered her to me.
"I want to see you at the reception," said Alice, as she kissed me.
"All the way to the end, do you hear me?"
"You don't need to worry," I said, smiling. "Because if you disappear, I'll do a Liam Neeson, do you hear me? I have a very particular set of skills, and I'll hunt you down, I'll find you, and I'll kill you.
"Alice," I said, "I give you my solemn oath. I'll be the last one to bed tonight." "Right," she said, smiling and looking at me with something approaching love in her eyes. "You've been warned." They took their seats, leaving my mother and I together. "You look wonderful," I said.
"You're not just saying that, are you?"
she asked nervously.
"I'm not making a fool of myself."
"How could you be?" I asked.
"Because I'm 86 years old," she said. "And 86-year-old women don't get married. Especially not to 79-year-old men."
"I'm a cougar."
"Sure, everyone can get married now," I said. "It's the new Ireland."
"Did you not hear?"
"Cyril,"
said a voice behind me, and I turned around. "You're busy today," I said. "I thought I wouldn't see you for another few days yet." "You can come over later tonight, if you want," he said. "No," I replied, shaking my head. "You said Halloween. Actually, you said a few days after Halloween."
"All right," said Julian. "I was just checking."
"We'll have a bit of a laugh when you do get here, though. There's a couple of girls I want us to double date with." I rolled my eyes.
"You don't change, do you?" I asked.
"Just be my wingman, that's all," he said. "You don't have to actually do anything."
"Halloween," I said. "A couple of days after."
"Fine," he said. "Are we set then?" asked my mother.
"I am if you are."
"Is he here?" "He didn't change his mind."
"Oh, he's here all right. You're going to be very happy, the two of you. I know you are."
She nodded and swallowed a little as she smiled at me. "I feel that too," she said. "He was wrong, wasn't he?"
"Who?"
I asked.
"Father Monroe.
He said I'd never have a wedding day. He said that no man would ever want me. But here that day is." "He was wrong."
"Of course he was wrong," I told her.
"They were all wrong. They were wrong about everything."
I smiled and leaned forward to give her a kiss on the cheek. I knew this might be one of the last things I got to do in this world, leaving my mother in the hands of someone who would take care of her. And I felt great relief to know that there was a family, a big family, who would look after her when I was gone. She needed that. She'd missed out on it all these years. But now, here it was. "Walk slowly," said a voice from behind me. And I turned around and felt my heart jump into light. "Remember, you're on a crutch and she's an old lady."
"You came," I said.
"I heard you were looking for me.
Julian told me." "I didn't think I'd see you. Not till, you know, till it was my turn."
"I couldn't wait," he said.
"You look exactly the same as you did on that last day, in Central Park."
"Actually, I'm a few pounds lighter," he said. "I've been on a fitness drive."
"Good for you." I stared at him and felt the tears forming in my eyes. "Do you know how much I've missed you?"
I asked him.
"It's been almost 30 years. I shouldn't have had to spend all that time on my own."
"I know. But it's nearly over. And you haven't done a bad job of it at the same time, given the mess you made of the first 30.
The years apart will feel like nothing compared to what we have before us." "The music started," said my mother, clutching me to her.
"I have to go, Bastien," I said.
"Will I see you later?"
"No. But I'll be there in November when you arrive."
"All right." I took a deep breath. "I love you." "I love you too," said my mother.
"Shall we go?"
I nodded and stepped forward. And slowly we made our way down the aisle, passing the faces of our friends and family,
and I delivered her into the arms of a kind man who swore to love her and take care of her for the rest of her life. And at the end, when the entire congregation broke into applause, I realized that I was finally happy.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Heart's Invisible Furies by John Boyne. This program was produced by Roy McMillan. Text copyright 2017 by John Boyne. Production copyright 2017, Random House Audiobooks. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.